Is it the smell of Satan? In the last few days of the election of 2016, Hillary Clinton has been accused of smelling like rotten meat by Alex Jones. This was confirmed by Bill Clinton's former girlfriend, Dolly Kyle, who said that she smelled worse than anything that she had ever encountered, and it was an absolutely unique smell. Alex Jones repeated this claim that Hillary is literally demonic while talking to Larry Nichols. I have a little bit of that clip. And Nichols claims that Hillary Clinton had attended a witch's church in Los Angeles every 4 to 6 weeks when she lived in Arkansas, and, quote, is pure, deep, evil, mean, meaner than anything you'd come in contact with. And Alex Jones said, I can't look at her. I'm really sick of her. She's a damn demon. And they also said that Obama had a demonic smell. I got a clip of that. I also add to this that Obamacare is having a lot of trouble, and the president was very quick to point out that it had absolutely nothing to do with him. Now, I suspect that he will evolve into the position, you think this is bad, you should have seen healthcare if we didn't come up with Obamacare. The same thing he said about the economy, which he doesn't say as much anymore. And we do have a call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
My name is Bob.
Bob, good morning. And first-time caller?
Yes, it is.
Well, I appreciate your call. And what's on your – I hope you're doing well. What's on your mind? Excuse me.
I wondered, I missed Ben yesterday, Ralston, and I was wondering, what did he have to say?
Well, you know, hold on a second here. I think I have a clip open. I'm sorry about that. Geez, let's see. What did he have to say? Well, you know, Blog Talk Radio is where I simulcast this show. If you go to Blog Talk Radio, which is one word, Blog Talk Radio, and then put in Kelly O'Connell, you can bring up all the shows. You can actually listen to yesterday's show if you wanted, but I'm trying to remember what we were talking about. We had Rick Little on as well, so we ended up talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Pardon me, Bob.
I heard him, but I don't have that electronic equipment to do anything with. That's why I'm calling.
What did you have for dinner last night, Bob?
I don't remember.
I'm trying to remember what we talked about. I think that he talked about we did talk. If you heard Rick Little, then you heard part of. Did you not hear part of the Rawson report?
No, I didn't hear any of it. I just missed it completely.
Let me think. Let me knock my head against the wall a few times. I will try to remember. Anything else?
That's it.
Thanks for the call. Wow, I guess the Rawson Report is popular. Forget what you're talking about. Let's talk about what you talked about yesterday. But all right. So what did we talk about yesterday? We talked about. You know what came up was Talavera, and I wanted to get a hold of the guys in Talavera, Talavera and the trailer park that they want to bring in there, and the bitter aftertaste that people are feeling having moved up there and believing that they were in a premier part of town. And obviously when you have a trailer park move in next door, it does affect the property prices. So we talked about that. We talked about a little bit about the ghost fleet of buses that we have constantly patrolling Doniana. And we talked about voter fraud and the possibility, well, voter fraud in the past and the possibility maybe a voter fraud down in Chaparral and Sunland Park. But go to Blog Talk Radio. Put in my name. And you will find that yesterday's show is in there, and you go to the date, and it'll have a, you know, some sort of a, I can't really get to it right now to tell you what the title was, but it'll have my opening speech, my opening. I usually do a type up a little opening monologue to start off the show, and that's in there, and then on the top right of the page they'll see something that looks like a little mushroom. If you click on the page starts playing when you open it. But if you click on the mushroom, the little white mushroom, what happens is there'll be a download of the show. You just click on that, and then a box will pop up, and then you click on save it. So, but that's what we talked about on the Rossin Report yesterday. And I'm getting some more people. I've got Cia Levitino coming on today, I think, later. And I'm trying to get everybody who's running to come on the show. People like Jeff Steinborn have been on, I think, once or twice already. I'll get his opponent on. Some of the people I doubt are going to want to come on. Nathan, please don't call me tiny, small. I cannot imagine that he would come on the show under any circumstances, as I think he holds me with a great deal. And he views me with a great deal of disgust from just reading his facial reactions when I try to say hi to him. I feel like he believes that I unfairly hung a nickname on him and am opposed to him. But, I mean, if you don't come on the show, all I have left is some commentary or summary. I mean, if you come on the show, I'll be fair to you. No problem. If you don't come on the show, that just leaves it to me instead of you to sum up who you are. And Nathan, I don't know. Nathan seems like kind of a poodle to me. Not a guy that got involved in politics way, way too early before he had much life experience, and he was working at the Wilderness Alliance. So you go to college and you have a very far left experience in college. You become, and this is what we were talking about. This is actually a great segue here. You go to school, you're raised in your family, whatever you learn from your family, and then you go to school to become educated, supposedly. You go into school and you are exposed to leftism. So when I first went to school, University of Oregon, and I took a literature class, and I was thinking about majoring in literature because, you know, I really enjoyed it. And the teacher, who I believe she was gay from my memory, very short hair and kind of a militant personality, stood up in one of the first classes, and we were talking about a text that we had read, and she said basically that any meaning that the text has, you're bringing to it. I thought that is totally bizarre, you know? And so it meant that the writer doesn't have a message or doesn't have a story, doesn't have a theme, doesn't have, you know. So I thought, you know what, I really don't think I'm going to major in literature if that's the way they're teaching it. So I did have one class that I took a couple years later, which was the Romantic Poets, which would be Byron and Keats and Shelley, which I really enjoyed. I was really into poetry for a while, but that was on my own, you know. Spent a couple of years really getting into it, but poetry doesn't pay the bills, so. But you get into school and you're an empty vessel, right? And the professors and the teachers, the tenured and the untenured, the faculty is giving you what they believe in. And Marxism has been extraordinarily influential in the academy for the last 50 or 75 years, so 100 years, whatever it is, depending on how you measure that. And so you get exposed to this stuff. And so you kind of take it up, you know, that your first language makes a huge imprint on you. Your religious experiences from your parents, your childhood makes a huge impression on you, by lack of probably any competing other interests or information. And so when you're exposed to this way of seeing the world, it makes a huge impact, and in my opinion, a devastating impact on a lot of people who are never able to get beyond leftism, and they don't try to. They don't try to because they've fallen in love with it. And leftism is a simplifying, simplistic way to see things. But one of the things that it does is it teaches the people that believe in it that they are smarter than anybody else. So it's very seductive that way. And, so just give you an example of how leftism reduces everything. Number one, Marxism says everything is driven by money or more wealth. And the class structure is driven by wealth. And so that strips away all the other meaning from history. It strips away religion, obviously, and the importance of art and all these other things. So what you see is, as a result of the application of leftism to society, you get movements in areas that, speaking of poetry, you get movements, intellectual movements, that come in and basically cannibalize. It's like a virus. A virus, you know, moves into a herd of cattle or into an orchard or something, and it decimates it. It leaves it a shell of its former self. Leftism, Marxism, is like a virus that comes in and steals the content away from things. So you have something like modern art, abstract art. So you have people throwing paint against a canvas, and then the people that are the great authorities on art are saying this is the state of the art. This is the, no pun intended, but this is the summary of the genius that we have to offer humankind on art. Although art was traditionally about something, it wasn't abstract art is kind of a reaction. It's kind of a criticism of art. If you do a little bit of a study in the history of modern art, abstract art, you will find at the root leftism, Marxism. And that has happened in area after area after area in our society. And it is like a virus that comes in and intellectually decimates the people. And then the content is removed from society. And so people are left to their devices, their instincts, which are then not, you know, and then we're raising kids and teaching them that there's nothing bigger out there than really at one level than your opinion, than your feelings. And they're training people to hate the individuals who are not socialists, not leftists. It is, it's very sad. It's kind of morbidly funny, I guess. Funny and kind of a sad way to see how easily duped people are, duped into something that is so unpleasant. 523-1450 to call in. We'll take a break here. We got some more Dave Brubeck. Speaking of art, and I've been playing a number of the greatest jazz albums in history from the golden age before an abstract movement came through jazz and resulted in freeform jazz. 620 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. And I'm going to play some of the Hillary Stench videos, one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. We'll be right back. All right, there is this claim out there that I thought you might find entertaining since we're past the debate, that Hillary Clinton has a tremendously foul stench that some are calling demonic. Demonic smell. Can you believe it? Here, check it out. From Alex Jones, 624 Kelly O'Connell. InfoWars, of course. Alex Jones. I was going to say one more thing before we kind of go into this. About art. The cornerstone is great art of great art is truth. That's long been understood. That's the study of aesthetics or whatever. That is why art lasts from one generation. Great art lasts from one generation to another. But if you buy into modern art, the theory behind modern art, abstract art, you know, the paintings that look like somebody threw a balloon full of paint at a canvas and all the other crazy stuff. If you buy into that, then you don't believe that art, there is such a thing as art. So that's what leftism, that is the dreary effect of leftism, is to take meaning out of things. And like I say, it's like a virus. It eats into and consumes content and replaces it with scar tissue, basically. I don't know, kind of a metaphor. Here we go. Here's the stench of Hillary.
And try to prepare my mind to, say, put out a video chronicling the Clintons' crimes. It's mind-numbing. I mean, these are such truly nasty, greedy, horrible people that it's coming out that any building they're in, they just suddenly want everything in the building. They're kleptocrats. They are truly governing kleptomaniacs who want your very life. I mean, they knew for a decade that they were shipping HIV, hepatitis blood out and having it mixed in a factor eight. Everyone would get HIV and hepatitis that took it, the hemophiliacs and others. And people came to the Clintons a couple of years into it, and Hillary's like, we're getting paid. I don't care. I mean, I interviewed the doctor who was at the hospital at the major prison who actually went to the Clintons. Their response was to try to get him fired and then have his offices robbed.
All right. I want to make sure that I've got this queued up right. Let me play for you a variation on this. This is Bill Clinton's girlfriend, Dolly Kyle. When they were growing up together, they were boyfriend, girlfriend, and they both ended up going to law school. And so when she came back, as Bill Clinton was getting ready to graduate and go to Oxford and everything as a Rhodes Scholar, that's where Hillary had come in from Yale. So anywhere, this is Dolly Kyle.
Okay, so we got to this part. It's the first time 1974 Democrat convention happened in Arkansas. Here comes Hillary with the guys in suits with her. Tell us what happens next.
Well, my first thought was, oh, dear. Remember the Seinfeld episode with the valet parker who smelled bad?
Yes.
The first thing I thought was, oh, my gosh, I have cloth seats in my car. And believe me, I was worried about my car. But I let this woman get in there anyway.
She smelled that bad?
She really did, Alex. She really, truly did. And I'm not just being tacky. Call me Margaret Mead in Samoa. I had never seen or smelled any woman like that, ever.
Did we talk before you got here today?
No. Why?
When's the last time you talked to me?
Well, I guess on the radio show?
Yeah.
Months ago?
We fly by the seat of our pants. We're just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's a big national. Are you aware of the national controversy right now concerning me? I mean, the president responded to it.
No, I don't think so. What happened?
It was the top story 3 days ago. I just said from my Secret Service sources, and I also talked to people in protective detail from the Pentagon. They said, we don't know what's going on, but Hillary smells like a dead pig. Mm-hmm. And I talked about it, and they said I was completely insane. I said, she smells like a demon, and that Obama stinks to high heaven.
Oh, I did hear that. Yes, about the demon thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know what a dead pig smells like.
I do. Well, the point is they smell like hell. But it's funny, I don't know if you're right about the book, but wow, that's crazy. I mean, bringing up how bad she smells. I'm just telling you, people are telling me she smells. So what's she smell like?
I don't know. I'd never smelled anything like that before. I mean, her hair was dirty and greasy and her dress was stained. So I assume it was something on her, in her, or she hadn't bathed.
Two Blackwater people, an army colonel, Secret Service, just say, We're scared of her. She blows up and screams half the time, fits, falls down angry, I mean, like a two-year-old, and smells like, and I go, what? They go, it's the worst smell you've ever smelled. And I'm, it's just, you didn't even know this, and here you are bringing it up.
No, because it was the first, one of the first things that I noticed. And who could not notice someone who smelled that bad, especially when they were going to get in my car with cloth seats?
That's what I tell listeners. I'm not going to make this up if we're not getting these sources. So.
Well, ask anyone in Arkansas who met her back then. Don't take my word for it.
This wasn't just normal hippie body odor.
I wouldn't think so.
All right, please continue. So what else? So she's a stinking creature arrives?
Well, the thing that really bothered me that night, and I started to talk about, you said, is Billy more evil now?
All right, so we'll take a little break here. And the claim, I mean, if it's true, I wonder what it is about her that, I mean, you can say it's because she doesn't bathe, but it sounds weird, you know? Anyway, I got some local news for you, 6:30, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I'll find the place where Alex started talking about that in this other clip just to round it out, and then we'll move on. Not a whole show about how stinky Hillary is. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in. And we're investigating Hillary at a new level here. We'll be right back to continue it. All right, so coming out, Hillary gripping table, chair as she stumbles towards podium at charity dinner. So she may, the stress of all these things may be making her a little bit more sick. All right, here is Larry Nichols, who is, he used to work for the Clintons. He used to be their fixer or their procurer or whatever. And he's talking about Hillary. I think he's going to talk about her going to a satanic church and then her supposed remarkable stench.
I had to justify her going out to LA about every 4 to 6 weeks to a witch's church. Finally, when it got so bad, I had to confront her. I said, Hillary, at least for show, at least for public show, if we get caught, you're going to have to stand up. I know you go to Methodist church, stand up and say you believe in God. She turned away from me, Alex. Never forget it. She turned away from me. And as she started to step away from me, she kind of tilted her head back and said, you know, I can't do that. That's haunted me all the years. You know, what did she mean? You know, I can't do that. I mean, if she made a deal with the devil, if there's ever been a person that has made a deal with the devil, I cannot imagine that they would act any different than Hillary Rodham Clinton. She's evil. She's mean. Bill's a good timer. He just wants the perks, buddy. That's all he wants. Hillary is pure, deep, evil, mean. Meaner than anything you've ever come in contact with. There's not a wild animal in Africa that will attack you.
Well, let me just say, at a spiritual level, at this level, fighting her and picking up on this stuff, it's nauseating. I can't look at her. I'm really sick of her. I mean, she's a damn demon. And it seemed to really get to them that I called them demons.
Well, it would. She's sensitive to that. But I'll tell you this, ask anybody that's ever been around her about the odor.
Let's talk about the odor, because I've had Secret Service say she smells like basically like rotting meat. I said, what's it smell like? And a guy joked and goes, you know, crap. They go, no. He said the other word, S-H, you know what? And they go, no, like rotting meat. We're all like, ugh. Then I talked to Dolly Kyle. She said, worst smell, dirtiest she's ever seen, just totally filthy all the time. I had to be around her for years. And then I talked to their chef. He said, yeah, I never got really close, but they say she stinks really bad. Obama, I've been told, smells like rotting meat. Now, the Bible says this is what demons smell like. I just keep getting told they smell like hell. Tell us, Larry.
Look, you're talking to the guy. The first time I met her, she was all dirty, filthy, dirty hair, wearing a muumuu, flip-flops, and she smelled horrible. Well, I thought it was because of her hygiene. Later, as she started getting cleaned up and dressed up, there is an odor around that woman that if you're within 10 rows of her, if you have any kind of smell sense at all, you're going to smell her. And it is. It's hard to describe it. Rotting meat, you know, just rotten. It's just a rotten smell.
Well, I know the Secret Service people, look scared. They said, listen, she's scary. I know they're all making jokes about it, but everybody that works around her, it's in the WikiLeaks, knows that this woman is like Linda Blair.
Hey, let me tell you, that is Sage Guy at WikiLeaks. Let's get one.
All right, so anyway, kind of interesting, isn't it? I've never heard that about anybody else. I thought you might find it entertaining and informative. All right, I've got a bunch more stuff here. For you, I have got... looking here. All right, so the Philippines, I'm going to come back and tell you about this. The Philippines has said that we lost out and that they are cutting off ties to America. I couldn't believe it when I was reading this, and they blamed it on Obama. So that's the same guy that's going around and killing all the drug dealers, so he's a little unhinged himself. 640, they've got a, I believe, $13 trillion deal with Russia. But the good times of America are apparently over. 640, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Be right back.
Kelly, I don't listen for a month, and I turn it on, and you're playing shit like that. Unbelievable. That is so deplorable, and you're in the basket with them. I am so ashamed of you. My God, that is disgusting. I mean, get it on WikiLeaks. Get it on her policies. Get it on she won't go in and fight in Syria, you know, no boots on the ground, whatever. But to go that low, my God, Donald and
Kathy,
all the others are just disgusting,
Kathy,
just totally
Kathy,
disgusting.
Kathy, did you want to say that on the air?
No, I'm going to go back to my Garth Brooks channel. Bye.
Thank you. Enjoy Garth Brooks. Take care. Have a nice weekend. So a call from Kathy, who's totally disgusted with me, who she said that she's going back to listen to Garth Brooks and that basically she's astounded that anyone would talk about how Hillary smells. I just thought it was interesting. But all right, so here is another thing before we get into this Philippine thing. President Obama claiming a premium rates or increases are not due to Obamacare. You know, when you listen to Obama, it's seems to me anyway that he would be a much better entertainer than a president. He doesn't really seem in a lot of ways to be interested in policy in foreign there's a story in this book called The Amateur that the way Obama makes decisions, you know, he likes basketball. He says he gets up in the morning and spends his mornings watching ESPN. That when he makes a decision, he's given these policy books, and then he leafs through them really quickly, and he gets to the end, and he makes these kind of off the cuff or gut decisions, and then hands the book over as if he is an Einstein of politics. He doesn't have to spend a lot of time. He doesn't have to immerse himself. He seems like someone who's content with watching the country founder and trying to blame it on somebody else. That's the appearance here. Anyway, Obamacare is basically in free fall right now because the premiums are getting so high and so many companies are getting out of it. And in addition to that, there's a lot of doctors who are saying that they're not going to be involved in it either. So just like the Doniana has ghost buses, Obamacare might be ghost healthcare. And people might be going off the grid, they might be making private arrangements to get health care. if you've got the money, and if not, maybe you're in Medicare. But here's the president on this.
And then in some cases, insurers just set their prices too low at the outset because they didn't know what the insurance pool was going to look like. And then they started losing money. And so now they've decided to significantly increase premiums in some states. Now, it's these premium increases in some of the states in the marketplace that sometimes attracts negative headlines. Remember, these premium increases won't impact most of the people who are buying insurance through the marketplace because even when premiums go up, the tax credits go up to offset the increases. So people who qualify for tax credits, they may not even notice their premiums went up because the tax credits cover it. And keep in mind that these premium increases that some of you may have read about have no effect at all if you're getting health insurance on the job or through Medicaid or Medicare. So for the 80-plus people who already had health insurance, if your premium's going up, it's not because of Obamacare, it's because of your employer or your insurer, even though sometimes they try to blame Obamacare for why the rates go up. It's not because of any policy of the Affordable Care Act that the rates are going up.
Of course not. Not my fault. Who, me? I didn't do anything. The guy takes over the entire medical system and then says outside factors are responsible for the increase in costs. Listening to him, it strikes me he doesn't understand capitalism. He probably doesn't have any interest in it. And he doesn't understand his own plan. But the idea that healthcare providers go in and overprice their premiums, if they're doing that, it's probably because, they're trying to stay in business, right? I mean, this idea that they're over... Obama knows more about how expensive these plans should be, even though, than the people that own the business, of course. Just off the top of his head. The big problem in socialism when you get down to actually selling stuff is if you don't have market competition, you don't know what things cost because people are not allowed to put the price of the cost of production into the price of the product. So the market in generally in capitalism supplies the competition provides the price level based on what things cost to produce and transport, distribute, package, all these different things. And socialism fails at least from one angle because that there's no realism in the pricing. You have to have a capitalistic system to know what things cost because that's how that's how you do it. The people that are producing the different things that go into your product, price them in a competitive way so they can make money, so they can pay their costs, pay their employees and everything, and then have a little bit left over. So this idea that capitalism is a better way to do things is just nuts. Socialism. 6:48, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Open Topic Friday if you want to change the topic. We'll be right back. Kathy called in. She was very disappointed that I would put anything on about Hillary's smell. Why did I do it? Well, number one, I find it a strange story. Number two, I find it entertaining and totally unexpected. The third thing, though, is I think it gets into the why people don't like her personally. She's got bad hygiene or she's got I don't know what would cause somebody to smell like dying meat, dead meat, rotting meat, but it can't be anything good, and her health is already greatly diminished from what I can tell. So just pointing out that there's something wrong with her. If the average person if there is something wrong with them and they smell bad, they take care of it. In one of these clips I was playing last night, there was a speculation, and I think it was, I'm trying to remember if it was that Larry Nichols guy or Dolly Kyle. It was one of the two. Dolly Kyle was the original girlfriend for Bill Clinton when he was growing up. She's got a very sympathetic view of Clinton, Bill Clinton. She says he's a sex addict, and that's what caused all his problems, even rapes and sexual assaults. He can't control himself. She said it's an addiction. So she doesn't see him as a bad guy. Larry Nichols doesn't see Clinton as a bad guy. And Hillary, it doesn't matter, because they both know from way, way back Hillary, and they said that, and I think it was Dolly Kyle was saying that Hillary Clinton was raised in a home where there was, her father was a drill sergeant. He was a perfectionist. There was no love, or there was no, you know, encouragement. And, she could never achieve, you know, her dad had always kept the level standards so high that she couldn't achieve. She couldn't please him. She grew up in that. And then she said something interesting. She said that Clinton had been molested by or raped or touched by somebody in the military. I don't know if it was her dad or whatever. The implication was that it was also molested by a woman. And Kyle said that's why she hates men and women. Now, if you were into this type of thing, if you believe in God, the Bible and everything, I've heard people say, pastors say, when kids get molested, it exposes them to demons because it's a demonic activity. It's the worst thing that you can do to another person. So I just thought that was interesting, that whole thing going in together. But one of the statements that was also said that it would be worth noting to think about, Hillary Clinton didn't get involved with Bill Clinton and try to make him a better person, didn't try to get him to overcome his sex addiction or whatever it was that was really driving him, his own misery in his childhood. His father was an alcoholic. His stepfather, his mom kept bringing him back. His real father, stepfather, whatever it was, there was a lot of unhappiness in his house. And, you know, these childhood demons were not, you know, Hillary just kind of took advantage of him. He needed somebody. She needed somebody. She needed someone to get her closer to power. He needed someone to help him to, you know, but it's an odd relationship. And the upshot is that if there is a spiritual world, if there is demonic, I mean, some of the stuff that you've heard about these guys, how do you not say, you know, if the poorest country in the world, in the hemisphere, has a devastating disaster and they're the gatekeeper for the funding, and billions of dollars pour in there, why isn't that country rebuilt? Why didn't they build a whole bunch of cheap homes for these people? A lot of people over there in the disaster areas are still living in tents years later. And so what kind of a person takes advantage of the poorest of the poor after a disaster? You know, it's devilish, you know. All right, investigation. Here's some local news. Investigation underway into deadly shooting in Barreno, New Mexico. 59-year-old man shot and killed in Barreno. And deputies with the Doñana County Sheriff's Office said the shooting happened around 3 p.m. along San Benito Street near La Purisima Church. The area is off a dirt road near a cotton field. The man was shot in the torso at least once. The alleged shooter seen leaving the area. And they got canine units and border patrol agents and helped find the suspect. The scene is about 5 miles from Gadsden Middle School. And so it caused a lot of concern with this at the school. And of course, now the alleged shooter had recently been fired. And a 59-year-old man shot and killed Wednesday afternoon was identified as Jose Alfredo Armendariz of Socorro, Texas. And he was repairing a water pump when another man drove up to him and opened fire. He was shot twice in the torso. Gunman was identified as Sergio Morales Navarez. And he drove away from the scene and abandoned his vehicle after shooting him. drove into a ditch. That was found later. And according to court documents, a man who was with Amendariz at the time of the shooting said Amendariz was the foreman of the ranch and Merez Navarez's supervisor. And so Merez Navarez's wife told investigators that her husband had been recently fired and they were going to have to move out of the residence because the home belonged to the landowner who he worked for. And that Merez Navarez was deported to Mexico in 2013, but is currently in the country legally. He's charged with homicide, aggravated assault, shooting from a motor vehicle, and tampering with evidence. He's being held without bond. Anyway, very sad story on that one. And then I've got another story that New Mexico Attorney General to prosecute suspect in APD officer's murder. And for that situation, I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But anyway, we still got this race going on, and very interesting. You know, there's going to be some more twists and turns, but I'm going to have Seal Levitino coming on in the next hour at some point. I think at the half hour, 7:30. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And we'll take a break on the hour and call in if you have another topic you'd like to discuss. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Thanks for tuning in if you're just joining me. And we went through, I got some criticism from Kathy, but there was a interesting and kind of entertaining story out there about Hillary and that she has some sort of a terrible smell that like people have never smelled before and has had for a long time. But I think the most interesting part of the clip is one that I didn't even really get to, which was her character. Whereas people think that she has a real grudge against humanity and the potential to start a world war because she's such an angry person. I'm not a psychologist, but I think that, you know, these people that were, you know, I'm not saying that she's going to get in and start a third world war. I don't have an opinion on that per se. Although she did some crazy stuff. She got us involved in Libya. She's the person who single-handedly decided that we were going to help overturn Libya, and that's become a nightmare. Reminds me of the phrase, the devil that you know is better than the devil that you don't know. She was also involved in the decision in Syria. She was involved in the decisions in Iran. All of those, all three of those greatly created or led to a much greater increase in instability in that region. And there will be decades of effect from that. You know, Iran now has hundreds of billions of dollars to buy weaponry and nuclear weapons if it wants to. It's supposedly developing nuclear weapons or has them already. Anyway, I'm just kind of thinking through this thing, whether Hillary would be a risk for getting in conflict. And I'm kind of thinking there's got to be a reason that she yells and has an angry tone in her voice a lot of times when she's giving a speech. And everybody has come up with, you know, the first defense of it is that you're criticizing her because she's a woman. So a great deal of the defense of her so far has been that she's a woman. You wouldn't say that about a man. I actually think that anybody who gets up and is yelling during a speech and sounds angry, there would be commentary on it. So I'm just kind of trying to think through this. If she is an angry person and an entitled person and an aggrieved person, as she seems to be, the question is, would that lead her to getting into armed conflict? And it would seem to me that that's the kind of an attitude that somebody would have that would make it more likely, although I don't know. I'd have to do a little study on the kind of people who do this type of things. But there was something that caused her to say in a very cavalier attitude that it's okay that we have a popular coup or this kind of religious coup in Libya, and it doesn't matter the outcome. And the fact of the matter is that tens of thousands of people were killed in that Arab Spring-related civil war that we gave our blessing to, and now the worst people are running the country, including ISIS. And she acts like she didn't have anything to do with it. The people that have caused the worst bloodshed in the last century were all into the kind of thinking or the kind of literature, the type of authorities that she gives her, has given her a blessing to. Now, the person who killed the most individuals last century was Chairman Mao Zedong. And he, according to the website in the University of Hawaii, he killed, I think, 76 million people. There's a website over there on mass murder, or actually on murder by government, that's run by a guy by the name of R.J. Rummel, and it's excellent. It's an excellent website. I would encourage you to go there and look at it. But these people, they all believe the same thing. The Russians and the Chinese and Stalin killed, according to R.J. Rummel, he killed 74 million. So almost as many as Chairman Mao. And then Lenin killed, I don't know how many he killed, 10, 20 million. But we're talking, you know, we're talking somewhere between 150 and 200 million people that did not have to die and were not killed for any good reason. It's tremendously sad to hear about this type of thing, you know. And it's unnerving to realize that the left has been so influenced by these same authorities, and that, you know, it's always a crapshoot to put a new leader in, but the person who was influential to Barack Obama was, or to Hillary Clinton, was this guy, Rules for Radicals, the guy that wrote the book Rules for Radicals. That's who she did her thesis on. Her thesis was titled, I believe, something along the lines of There's Only the Fight. And she was radicalized in Wellesley in undergrad. So she got into this stuff early. And then Obama obviously was a community organizer before he went to law school and after he went to law school. His only case, he had one case as an attorney, which anyway, I won't comment on that, but he did a case. The only case that he ever signed in for was for this group that was later disbanded. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Actually wrote this big article on it, but and it was involved in voter fraud. Let me look it up so I won't torment you with that. Acorn, right? So he was involved in that. So these people draw their inspiration from the same sources as these megalomaniac killers. I find that disconcerting. Now, you can say that the lessons of the past have been learned, but have they? I mean, why did she want Libya overthrown? And why does she make this joke? We went, we saw him, he died, whatever that. Remember that statement she said? Kind of based on Julius Caesar. Let's see if I can find a clip for it. I found this clip to be... All right, here we go. This kind of offhand remark she makes that was very chilling. Hillary Clinton, we came, we saw, he died. Veni, vidi, vici. This statement by Julius Caesar is kind of... trash by Hillary in this. Check this out.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
He didn't have anything to do with your visit.
No.
She's just got a very weird vibe and a strange thing. The death of Gaddafi and whoever else doesn't bother. I find that alarming. So, you know, there is something wrong with her, and I think it's good to know that, you know. I think it's not just about politics. It's a spiritual fight, if you want to put it in those terms. I would say that to Kathy, although I don't know exactly what Kathy believes. We'll take a break here, 7:15. We'll come back. I think we have Seal Leventino at 7:30. So 523-1450 to call in on AM Los Cruces, AM 1450. KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. All right. Here is whatever you make of this decision by Duterte, the leader of the Philippines. He is upset at the United States, and he's separating off, and he's been extremely critical of Obama, and the Obama administration has said in response, we didn't do anything, we're baffled. But here's Duterte announcing a separation from the U.S.
Your Honors, in this venue, I announce my separation from the United States.
Both in military,
but economics also. So please, you have another problem of economics in my country. I have separated from them. So I will be dependent on you for all time. But do not worry, we will also help as you help us.
All right, so he is over the United States. Here's a little bit more. This is a huge deal to me, and I'm astounded that the administration would just kind of shrug. But here it is, a little more on this. From Duterte getting a $13 billion deal from China.
Yet another tirade of President Rodrigo Duterte, who is keeping up his anti-U.S. rhetoric as he courts more investment from China. Duterte insists he is fashioning a new foreign policy, an independent one, so the Philippines can finally stand on its own feet. His critics claim he is turning his back on a powerful ally that helps balance the scales in Manila's dealings with Beijing. International columnist and author Richard Hayderian says what the president is doing is creating competition.
Yes, based on my discussions with the Japanese, is that as the Chinese come in, they're becoming more competitive. So it's now easier for us to play these economic giants against each other so that we'll get more investment.
All right. So anyway, maybe nothing more to it than that. But there is a continued calling out by this president of on Obama. You remember when Obama also flew to he flew over to China and they didn't put out the stairs. You know, the thing is that Obama acts like the coolest, hippest. He's a smart aleck, you know, he acts tough, I guess. He kind of, the way he walks, he kind of, I don't know, doesn't really skip, but he kind of has a little spring in his step. I think that the rest of the world does not have a lot of respect for this guy, and I think that there's going to be a diminishment in America's place in the world because of it. I think there already has been, most people will tell you. 722 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450, Kelly O'Connell. And I've got something interesting that I stumbled across yesterday that I wanted to tell you about oxygen shifts and their effect on health. We'll be right back. Okay, so I stumbled across something that I thought I would just mention to you, and we do have Seal Leventino is going to be on from 7:30 on, but from Live Science, the article title is Oxygen Shift May Be Key to Resetting Biological Clock. A small shift in the oxygen levels in the air could act as a reset button for the biological clock, according to a new study of mice. And they were exposed to a brief dip in the levels of oxygen. They were breathing, adjusted more quickly to a new circadian rhythm and than mice that didn't have an adjustment in the oxygen. Now, it sounds kind of strange. It reminded me of a theory that they had as to there's this the story of Genesis and everything, that people had lived to be 5, 6, 7, 800, 9,000, 900 years old, almost 1,000 years old. And if that was true, what could have led to the difference in the lifespan? And I did a little bit of research, and I remembered someone had said that there was one of the theories is that there was something around the Earth. Maybe it was kind of some sort of a bubble that helped keep the pressure level higher, and it would be like a hyperbaric chamber. We know that people who go into hyperbaric chambers, that they heal faster if they have an injury, a burn, a broken limb or something. So there's something about increasing the pressure. And hyperbaric oxygen therapy for treating injuries, a possible source of the same length of time of the life of these people in the ancient world, it would be kind of an interesting thing. So we see that changes in the amount of oxygen make it more maybe a healthier atmosphere or a better living environment, and then the increase in the with the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, getting into this chamber where the pressure is increased, makes it easier, I think, to absorb oxygen and such. And the air pressure is increased from 1 to 2 times that of a normal sea level atmospheric pressure of 14.7 psi. And so there, some of the speculation is if that people lived in basically a hyperbaric chamber their whole life, and especially if they were protected from the rays of the sun somehow by this bubble around the Earth, that between those two things, that they would have lived a lot longer and healthier life. Just it's something interesting I thought I'd throw out. We'll take a break here and come back and check in with Seal, who's running for office, and want to find out what she's up to and how her campaign is going. And you can call in 523-1450 and ask questions or make comments. On AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, Kelly O'Connell Show, 729, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, it's 732. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we've got here... And it is, by the way, the 21st of October. We've got Seal Levantino, who's she and I are on friendly terms and have known her for a while, and her husband, Dr. Tony. Good morning, Seal. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So how are things going?
Things are going very well, very well. I think we'll all be glad when November 8th comes. But the campaign has been an amazing experience, and I'm just... having a great time out there meeting people and knocking on doors and listening to their concerns and getting a real education. And it's been a great experience.
All right. So what are some of the things that people have said to you as you go around from house to house?
It's been pretty consistent regardless of what letter they have after their name. They're concerned about jobs. They're concerned about the economy. They're concerned about the deficit, the state deficit. And they're concerned about education. Veterans issues come up. I can tell you multiple stories about knocking on doors and talking to young veterans who have come back from overseas, the Middle East, and are suffering.
Okay. And so what... Do you get the feeling that people were telling you that the veterans are not being treated the way they should be?
I think we all know that. I don't think that's something that can be disputed. These young people are coming back, and it's taking them months to get an appointment. Some of them have to go to Tucson for treatment, and they get over to the one story that I heard from a mother. Her son has to go to Tucson for treatment, and she's literally gone over there and been told that the treatment was canceled.
And that is that's got to be a 10-hour round trip.
Absolutely. It is, in my opinion, absolutely sinful. what's going on.
And what, have you been able to, through your investigations or from what you've heard from other people, to find out what's going on that is causing so much, so many problems? I mean, we talk all the time about how important our veterans are, and yet, and it's in the national news, and then these stories come out, and they're horror stories, and then you figure that something has to happen in the system after the horror stories come out, and then there's more horror stories. So what's causing it?
I think it's a lack of will on the part of our elected officials. I think it's a perfect example of a bureaucracy that's out of control. And it's the problems are so ingrained, they're so deep, that to tackle it is going to take political courage, and I don't think that political courage exists.
So that is something that you would address in your, if you were elected, that's something that you would take to the roundhouse to up north.
Absolutely. Both of my parents are veterans. My mother was a World War II veteran. I grew up in a household where respect for our veterans was very strong, obviously. I can remember this was back in the days when you weren't afraid to pick up hitchhikers. But my mother would literally see servicemen hitchhiking, literally pick them up and bring them home and feed them dinner with the rest of the family. That's how I was raised. I was raised to love our country, respect our veterans, and take care of them.
After we got rid of the draft and now we have a volunteer army, I think that may have taken away some of the identification that people have with the military. And, you know, there's some families nobody serves in the military.
That's true. But I don't think that prevents people from understanding the importance of our military and the young men and women who go to serve. It is a huge sacrifice on their part and on the parts of their families.
And these people are oftentimes very patriotic, and it must be an extraordinary experience to serve, and especially to be injured and come out and realize that the level of commitment and service is so small.
I think that's true. And I think it begins with their service. You know, they're barely making minimum wage. Their families are living paycheck to paycheck. And yet we expect these young men and women to put their lives on the line to protect our freedoms. And I think they're treated very poorly.
So what kind of changes would you press for once you got into the Senate?
I think first and foremost, I would make sure that there was enough medical care in this area for our veterans so that they didn't have to go to El Paso, they didn't have to go to Albuquerque, or they didn't have to go out of state. El Paso's out of state, but not really. Mm-hmm. We are a large enough municipality at this point, and we have a very large veteran population. There's absolutely no reason in my mind that we should not have the services available right here.
All right. So, you know, the government doesn't have any problem spending money. We're $20 trillion in the hole. So if we're not spending enough money on veterans, it is a problem of the will, correct?
Absolutely. In my opinion, it is.
Okay, we're talking to Cielo Leventino and talking about her race and one of the problems brought up to her, tragic lack of care for the veterans. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph.
Morning, Ralph.
I have a question for your guest. I have been to the hospital in Albuquerque, but not their services because they would not bill Medicare and my supplemental insurance. I've been to the hospital in El Paso, walked out because they will not bill Medicare or my supplemental insurance. I have been here twice to this hospital, a veterans place there on, I forget what the street is. They will not, and I walk. I will not charge VA for any of my hospitalizations or anything like that. I want to help them. Yet they say the same thing. DC will not let us bill. We cannot do that. And I walk. I have not ever taken any medication or anything or treatments. And I have, my insurance have paid hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to hospitals. 10-day stay, one of these hospitals, $130,000 that could have gone to the VAs. Can you possibly even bring something like that up in D.C.?
Well, unfortunately, I won't be in D.C. I'll be in Santa Fe. But
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Sorry.
But I.
I'm so sorry.
Hold on, Ralph. Hold on. Go ahead, Seal.
But I understand what you're saying, and I think it verifies what I said earlier, that we have a huge bureaucracy that needs to be attacked, and the people in Washington simply do not have the political will to do it. And your call is a perfect example of that.
Ralph,
yes?
Did you want Seal's contact information if you might have a conversation with her, and if she gets in, maybe she can help out in your case?
Well, no, I have plenty of coverage and all that, but it's just that I want the VA, the veterans, to get that money. Can you imagine $130,000 for 10 days for the room alone? That's a cardiovascular intensive care. Kelly, that could have gone to the VA. Just that one. And let me tell you, I've been there. I don't even want to get on that. That all that money, and I'm sure there's a lot of other veterans that will not use a VA because they know how bad a situation it is. Those hospitals, like the one in Albuquerque, the one here in El Paso, the waiting room, there's over 100 people in there waiting.
Terrible. Well,
I've been there. I've walked in there.
It just confirms what she's saying. All right, I got to take a break here. Anything else?
No, thank you, Kel.
Thanks, Ralph. All right, so confirming what Seal was saying, we've got to get some better organization and funding. And really, if people are routinely treated poorly from coast to coast that are veterans, there needs to be some shakeup at the top and permanent rule changing and such. 741 Kelly O'Connell in Las Cruces. We're here with Seal Leventino. And her page is seal4nm.com, CEILFORNM.com. And the phone number on that page is 575-636-9702. And the email seal4nmsenate@gmail.com. We'll be right back. All right, so at 7:46 on AM Las Cruces on the 21st of October, and we've got Seal Leventino here, and this is a fight over the Senate. It's a fight over the future of the state, the control of the state. If you think things are going well, you want status quo. But what do you say to that, Seal?
I don't think anybody wants. I would hope that no one wants to keep the status quo. If you look at the facts and not the hyperbole that's coming out, we rank at the bottom of the list in educational success. We rank at the bottom of the list in child well-being. We rank at the top of the list in high school dropout rate.
We're at the top of the list in food stamps for kids.
We are, exactly. We are at the top of the list in poverty. We have had 85 years of Senate control by the same party.
It's been one-party rule, just like in Mexico.
Absolutely. Now, if you want to continue to be at the bottom of all the good lists and at the top of all the bad lists, support my opponent. If you want to see change, if you want to see us start moving away from that, looking at different alternatives, thinking outside the box, looking at what we can do. One of the biggest, maybe a month and a half ago, I can't remember now exactly when, but in the past month or two, the Legislative Jobs Council held a forum at NMSU, and they've been traveling around the state doing these forums. And there were legislators there from both parties from around the state, and we were broken into different groups. There were about 7 or 8 tables. And I started wandering from table to table to listen to what the discussions were. And at every single table, and it was bipartisan. It wasn't just the Democrats. It was bipartisan. The only thing they could come up with to reduce the state deficit was to raise taxes. And they were literally sitting around these tables talking about what they could raise taxes on. That was their only solution.
All right.
Really.
All right. So what's a better way, in your opinion?
I think there's lots of different things that the legislature needs to look at. One of them is, we just had this 5% cut across the board. In my opinion, that is a lazy way to do it. Every single department, if the legislature would take the time and do their job and look at every single department individually and say, okay, you're running on a razor-thin budget. We're only going to cut you 1%. Another department, you are really bloated.
Yeah.
We're going to cut you 12%.
It's, in other words, it's totally mindless.
It is mindless, but it's the easy way out. And we have to stop going down the easy way out.
All right, so it seems to me that no matter who you are, you have to admit a bigger economy means more tax revenue for the state. Why is the economy so stagnant here? A couple of years ago, we had 300 jobs created in this county. I mean, my heart, I felt heartbroken when I saw that. That means that there is nothing for people who are growing up here to get into.
UNM just recently did a study, which I found very interesting. The vast majority, fact, 27 of our 33 counties are losing population.
Is it one more time?
27 of our 33 counties are losing population.
All right. Why?
UNM did a study, and the vast majority of the people who are leaving this state are young men and women with four-year degrees who cannot find a job here.
So if you're the cream of the crop and you go to school here, maybe you even have a scholarship and you get done, your prospects are slim and none and slim just left town.
Exactly. You know, we are known as the flyover state for businesses. They fly over us to go to Texas or Arizona or Colorado or Utah or Oklahoma. Our state GDP lags behind all five of our neighboring states.
Why? What would you say is the reason?
I don't think there's one reason. I think our tax structure is unfriendly to businesses. I think our education system scares people away. And these are issues that have to be honestly discussed. And it's difficult to get people, certainly it's difficult to get my opponent to sit down and be honest.
I don't hear anybody talking about this, and yet this is probably the biggest issue that I've heard so far in this race.
I'm the only one talking about it. I'll give you some other examples. As of fiscal 17, which started July 1st, the federal government has withdrawn part of the financial underpinning of our Medicaid expansion in the state. This year alone, it will cost the taxpayers in this state $46 million just to fill the gap. Over the next 5 years, it is estimated that this state will have to generate in new revenue, $778 million just to fill the gap. That doesn't include all the new people that are signing on. Where are we going to get $778 million in new revenue without making this a state that businesses want to come to and invest in?
You're almost painting a picture of a socialist nation within America.
Bingo.
Well, that's just devastating to hear.
But it's what is happening here. And we have no one to blame but a legislature, particularly a Senate, that is so... has such a mindset that it will not look at reality.
But we've got the best growing state in the nation right next door, and many of the cities are on the list of the 10 fastest growing cities in the nation and the best cities to live in at the same time. So you see that if you have economic growth, that makes it a better place to live. Why is that?
Because people will not only want to stay here, people will want to come here. They will want to raise their families here. They will want their kids in our schools. They will want to retire here. We don't have those incentives. We don't have those quality of life incentives to bring businesses and people here. It's much more attractive to go to our neighboring states.
Obviously. Well, and Ben Rawson has talked about this a lot, the drop in sales revenue and the increase in El Paso and all the cities around us increasing in revenue, and we're lowering it in terms of gross receipts. And that's, he said it's just proof that our policies are failed. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Jim. How are you all doing?
Good. Good morning, Jim. Hope you're well. And what's going on? You have a comment or a question?
Well, I'm sure glad to have this representative of ours on the phone talking to us. You know, when we hear the local people going at each other, not that it's right, but you can kind of expect me bantering back and forth. But one of the things that she's hitting on is we have this group, and I've called in about this before, called Patriot Majority, Patriot America, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that are coming in here slandering good people that put the same kind of people back in the office to tear our state down. That's the one she's talking about. And people are listening to them, and she's right. So many years have been given over to one party. What in the heck is it going to do to wake people up that, you know, being idiots doing the same thing over and over and over again?
One party rule means disaster. Look around anywhere in the world.
Yes, that's correct. I'm glad to have Lovettino on there this morning giving us her views. She seemed to be a very intelligent person. She's not coming on slandering anybody. She's just stating facts that we're where we are because of what we were.
Okay, we're running out of time. Thanks for the call, Jim. Your contact information one more time. It's on the website. She is pointing to the website. All right. 575-636-9702, 636-9702. Can people still put signs in their
absolutely.
Yards?
Have them call, and if I don't pick up, leave a message. We're out putting up signs, knocking on doors. I'm getting phone calls and discussing issues with people. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I'm really looking forward to getting up to Santa Fe and helping
thank God
move this state forward.
Move it forward. Okay. New Mexico, and this is from Biz Journal, 2015, New Mexico's overall population declined by 458 people from July 1st, 2014 to July 1st, 2015. Down 0.02%. During that same period of time, Texas gained 500,000 people, Colorado gained 100,000 people, and Arizona gained 100,000 people. What does that tell you?
It should tell us that we're doing something wrong.
And it's been wrong for a long time. And when you have local leadership saying this is a no-growth area, if you've got an insurance business, God bless you, but don't turn to other people and say, I'll take your opportunity away. This is a no-growth area. Shame on you. Number one city in the nation losing population, Farmington, New Mexico, down almost 9%. So, all right, Steele, we just got a minute left here. Give us your best elevator closing. If you're caught in an elevator with somebody for 1 minute, they should be able to give you a speech about what they're about. What's going on?
I think I am about doing what's right. Doing what's right for the state, certainly doing what's right for this area. I have been very successful in my 3 years on the city council. My district, District 6, is the fastest growing district in the city.
Mm-hmm.
We have created more jobs, brought in more businesses into District 6 than any other district in this city. I think that speaks well for my priorities, what I want to see happen, and what I will do in Santa Fe.
Right. And your background in nursing and as having your own business as a real estate agent really has plugged you into the community and about professions, being in a profession and also capitalism.
And we haven't even gotten into the medical problems that face this state.
can we get you back on the show soon before the election?
Absolutely.
And talk about that?
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on, Seal. And
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Her number one more time, 575-636-9702. And headline from Washington Post, population growth in New Mexico is approaching zero and other bad signs. Thanks for tuning in. And we thank Seal Levantino for coming on. We'll get her back on. Very illuminating. And here's some Dave Brubeck to take you out. Have a wonderful weekend. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Write that down on KOBE. We'll see you back in 2 days. Ciao. Mm-hmm.